हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनभुनक्थु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sarigaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Okay. So, continuing on discussion on the jiva, the meaning of the marginal potency. Okay, so just as innumerable sparks cascade out of a flame, similarly from Sri Krishna, who is the Atma, the universal soul, the jivas emanate, who are the separate parts and parcels. The jiva has access to two places, both of which he may seek, this material world and the spiritual realm. He is situated in Swapnasthanam, the dreamlike third state, on the margin of these two worlds. From that middle position, he is able to see both the material and spiritual worlds. The symptoms of the marginal existence are like those of a huge aquatic who is capable of living on both the eastern and western sides of the river at his own will. Similarly, the jiva soul, situated within the waters of the causal ocean, which lies between the material and spiritual worlds, is able to reside in both the dream world of matter and the spiritual world of divine wakefulness. Right? So within the waters means he's not just going to be floating on the water, he'll be within the universe, you know, that's floating on the water, because the universe is only within the water. If you're looking at Mahavishnu, then all these are on the water, right? They're very small, they come out of the pores, and then they all float on the water. Right? So then, situated in that position, he can see both the spiritual and the material world. Right? Vrajanas, what is the Vedic understanding of the marginal status known as Tatastha? Raghunath Das, Babaji. The borderline between water and land is called Tata, yet the water is contiguous to the land. Where then is the tata, the margin? The tata is merely the demarcation that separates the water from land. This tata is a very subtle state, right? Because it means, how do you tell? What's the difference between the water and the land? You know what I'm saying? It means that's the point, just like given on the ocean. The water is there, there's sand. The sand is land, the water is ocean. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? You know, because if you say, you know, you're walking there and the ocean comes up and it, you know, covers your feet by a few inches, you can't really say you're in the ocean. You can say you're in the ocean, but at the same time they'll say, no, you're on the beach. Right? And if you say, I'm on the beach, and you're walking on the beach, say, I'm on the land, they'll say, no, you're on the beach. You understand? So that's the thing, is it's subtle. What's the demarcation? So that's the thing. Both of them are there at once. That's the meaning of Tatastha, is that they can both be there at once. Because in the spiritual world, you only have spiritual energy, right? And material energy in the pradhan is only material energy. So it's the Tatastha Shakti that's able to hold together the jivas and the material energy, right? Or the spiritual realm and the material realm, right? When the Lord's Dham manifests here, you're having both the spiritual and material energy at the same place. right? Because the materialists don't come in and go, wow, this is different, right? They think it's exactly the same place. Does that make sense? So that's the tata is merely the demarcation that separates the water from land. This tata is a very subtle state. It cannot be perceived through mundane vision. From this allegory, we take the water as the spiritual world and the land as the material world. Thus, the fine line that divides the two worlds is the tata, the subtle demarcation exactly whereupon the jiva soul is located, right? Because you can see both there. The countless atomic particles that float in the rays of the sun give an inkling of the real position of the jiva. In one direction, the jiva sees the spiritual universe, and in the other, he sees the phenomenal world created by Lord Brahma, the world of Maya. The chit shakti of the Supreme Lord is unlimited, and the Maya shakti is enormous. Positioned exactly between the two are the innumerable jivas. They are the products of Sri Krishna's tatastha shakti, and hence by nature the jiva is marginal. Rajanath, what is the tatastha swabhava, marginal nature? Raghunath Das Babaji. The jiva is situated in the middle with access to both worlds, and he is constitutionally susceptible to come under the control of either of the shaktis. This condition is symptomatic of the tatastha swabhava. Right? Tatastha being in the middle, he could come under either. Right? That's his nature. He could be either under the internal or under the external. This condition is symptomatic of the tatastha swabhava. When the movement of river water shifts the bank of a river, this seizes the land and converts it into riverbed. Alternatively, silt may deposit onto embankments, which then gradually become land. Similarly, if the jiva looks towards Sri Krishna, his faith in Krishna increases, and he develops a stronger foothold in the spiritual realm. However, if he looks at Maya and turns his back to Sri Krishna, he thereby becomes enmeshed in the network of Maya. This choice is the natural characteristic of the tatastha swabhava. Right, so given the example is that the river moves. So what was land moves and becomes riverbed. Or it may be that it goes and it drops the silt there and that becomes land. So the same way as the jiva is sitting there, and if he looks at Krishna, then that side develops. You know what I'm saying? What was land turns into water. Right? But if he looks the other way, then the water turns into the land. You understand? So it's also important to note that he's turning his back. It means to see the material, you have to not see Krishna. If you see Krishna, you'll see the spiritual. If you don't see Krishna, you'll see the material. It's not that you're looking at Krishna and looking at the material. You know, simultaneously, it's one or the other. It means material means no Krishna. Does that make sense? So it makes it very clear what one has to do. If one wants to go back to Godhead, one has to see Krishna in everything. Then there's no Maya. Right? But if there's no Krishna, there's Maya. It's not that, well, you could have one or the... There's no such thing as having not neither. Right? It's the jiva doesn't have the choice to stay in the middle and not deal with either of them. Right? It's not a choice that it's given. Right? Because it's not its nature. So the choice is with Krishna or without Krishna. Those are the choices. Right? Does that make sense? Vrajanath, is the Maya Shakti in some way present in the constitutional structure of the jiva? Right? Because we're saying is that he's situated in the middle. And so becoming Krishna conscious is natural. But is Maya also part of his nature? Because then it would make the point is, then it's if he's in Maya, it's not an unnatural state. And if he's in the spiritual world, it's not an unnatural state. It's just whichever one you want. It doesn't really matter. So that's what the question brings out. So is Maya constitutionally part of the jiva? Raghunath Das Babaji. No, the jiva is a product of spiritual nature. However, because he is infinitesimal in size, he lacks sufficient spiritual strength. Therefore, he is vulnerable and can be easily defeated by Maya. Although Maya is actually totally absent in the constitution of the jiva. So the jiva's nature is he's come from the spiritual, so his constitutional nature is to be in the spiritual world. Right? It's conditioned that he's in the material world because he's covered by the other. He is of the spiritual nature, just he's very small. But material means he's covered by it. It doesn't mean the spiritual nature goes away. It just means the spiritual nature becomes covered. So it can't be appreciated, right? But because we identify with it, we think this is us. So then we don't very easily give up the idea, right? You don't want to give up something that's yours, you know? You know, does that make sense? You know, if you have something there and you're moving things, it doesn't matter. And then if you say, you know, you want it, you know, and that, you know, you don't respond, then when you go to move, well, wait a minute, that's mine. You know, it's like, does that make sense? So as soon as it's yours, you don't want to let go. So Maya is totally absent in the nature of the jiva. The jiva is Satchitananda, so there is no material element. Vrajanath. One of my teachers taught me that a spiritual fragment of Brahman, the Supreme, became engulfed by Maya and was thus transformed into the jiva. He gave the example of the sky, which is the borderless ether until it is captured within a boundary. For example, the portion of the sky enclosed within a pot. Similarly, he said, the jiva is by nature Brahman. But when this Brahman nature is covered by Maya, Brahman then becomes jiva. What is the correct understanding? Right? Because the Mayavadis are trying to point out that there is no such thing as the jiva on the eternal platform. Because they want to be God. So to be God, they're not going to be the person. You know, right? They're not going to be Paramatma. They're going to be Brahman. Right? That's the only one that they can kind of, because it doesn't have anything, it's easy to kind of like play with here. So then that means that there is no such thing as the jiva. What it is you've taken some of the ether, means, you know, just some of the sky, and if you have a pot, there's some sky in the pot. So you can identify that sky in the pot. So you call that jiva. You understand? So then we've become like this. Funny thing is how if it's one consciousness, it's just like if you stick your hand in a pot, you're still conscious of your hand. So it doesn't make sense. Is that how is the sky in the pot suddenly not conscious of its overall self and has a separate identity? Right? That element of consciousness, they don't. So their idea is that Brahman is not conscious, so therefore now it becomes conscious. So how is it the little stuff in the pot's conscious, the big one's not conscious? You know, it doesn't make sense because that means Maya has control over Brahman. But Maya is an illusion and doesn't actually exist. So the problem is they come up. The thing is they just by hook or by crook want to be God. And so therefore, even though the arguments don't actually have great validity, right? It means they're very easily seen that they're kind of foolish. But they accept them, just like the materialist accepts, yes, I can be happy in the material world, right? Everybody around him is not, but he's still confident, yes, I can be. So anything that will prove it, you know, an advertisement, somebody smiling or, you know, something in a show or there's one moment you're walking there, the whole day it's boring, you know, like this and that, and then you're sitting somewhere waiting for your train or your bus, and then somebody, two friends smile or something. That's it. See, here it is. There's the proof, right? The whole proof day has not been like that, but that's the proof I can enjoy, so I'm willing to work. Does that make sense? So the same way the Mayavadis are the same, but they do it through the intellectual platform rather than the emotional, right? So they try to prove it, though it doesn't actually prove it, but you know, it works for them because they want to be illusioned. Like that. Okay, so what's the correct understanding? Raghunath Das Babaji. This is simply the Mayavada view. How can the Maya Shakti even touch Brahman, who is fully transcendental? Right? If we say Brahman's transcendental, how can Maya touch it? Right? It's beyond this and that. But the thing is then if it's there, then how do you know that you merge back into the Brahman? Maya could again do her magic. You know, like that. So what's the guarantee? Because Brahman's not in control of it. He doesn't do anything. But Maya seems to be doing something. Right? You know. Further, if one believes that Brahman is latent, unmanifest energy without Shakti, then how can the Maya Shakti even exist to approach Brahman? Right? If there's only Brahman, then there's no Shakti. Where did Maya come from, which is the Shakti? Right? And how does Brahman transform into a Shakti as Jiva? Right? Because if there's no Shakti, there's just no Shakti. You know what I'm saying? It's just, it doesn't exist. Does that make sense? Furthermore, how may Maya be assertive when she has no independent potency and will? Because if it's an energy, it depends on energetics. So how can she assert her will over Brahman? Right? And if we're all Brahman and we're just part of the Supreme Brahman, we don't want to be here. How is it she's able to, exercise her independent will and control us? Right? So these are questions that come up that they can't answer. They'll have sometimes have stupid answers like, oh, it's Brahman's Leela. But the point is if it's perfect as Brahman, why do you need a Leela? Right? You know, sitting there, you come into your friend's house and he's sitting on the couch and he's hitting himself with a hammer. He says, what are you doing? Oh, it's Leela. But doesn't it hurt? Yeah, it hurts like anything. But so how is it, what is this? So Brahman can never be deluded by Maya's shroud of illusion. In addition, if one admits that Brahman is endowed with Chit Shakti, how then can the Maya Shakti, an insignificant Shakti compared to Brahman, and the Chit Shakti defeat the Chit Shakti and create Jiva out of Brahman? Right? So, means if there's no Shakti, how will there be anything in the first place? And if you do admit that there's Chit Shakti, because if he's Brahman, there has to be transcendental Shakti, then how would the reflection of that transcendental Shakti be able to control, overcome the internal potency, and then make little pieces of Brahman into Jivas? You know what I'm saying? It just doesn't work. Does that make sense? We're all comfortable with that? You know what I'm saying? Yeah? Okay. Brahman is immeasurable and indivisible, right? Because we say that. But then at the same time, it's been divided, right? And then you can measure it in a pot. So that's the point. It's all contradictory what they're saying. Because they're in the illusion that I can be God. That's all. So therefore, it comes up to that point. You don't look at those points. Like if you really want something, there's all kinds of negative aspects. You don't look at them at all. Oh, don't be negative. Oh, don't be that. Look at the positive and like this. And you look at that. But once you get it and then you're dealing with it, all the negative things come up. And then it's like, what about these? Why didn't I worry about these before? Right? You understand? So that's how the materialist doesn't worry about the obstacles to his enjoyment through his process, Does that make sense? So the karmi doesn't worry about all the obstacles in his process. And the jnani doesn't worry about all the obstacles in his. Simply because they're in illusion, right, under Maya, that they can be happy through one of these paths. Yes? Yeah, they remain in illusion. Right? Because the point is, as we can see, is that that position of tata, it's either you're under one or the other. It says that the fish, that big aquatic, can live either on the eastern bank or the western bank as he pleases. But it doesn't say he can just stay in the middle and not deal with the bank. Right? Does that make sense? The big aquatic, he gets his food at the bank. So it's just which bank? Right? The eastern bank or the western bank. So it's just a matter of whether you're using the Hong Kong exchange or you're using the New York exchange. So it's, either one you bank you like. Does that make sense? Yes? No? Kind of. Okay. Brahman is immeasurable and indivisible. How then can Brahman be fragmented and filled up in pots like some mundane material, like gas? It is a totally unacceptable conclusion to say that Maya can influence Brahman. Maya is completely uninvolved in the process of creation of the Jiva soul. In spite of the minuscule size of the Jiva, he is of a nature superior to Maya. Because once the Jiva comes under the control of the internal potency, Maya can't affect him. Because Maya is a reflection, is an illusion. Right? That's how she's means material energy is there, but it's not like the rock is having a problem. You're sitting there in the rock, oh no, the rock. So it's the rock is not giving you the problem. It's the illusion that I can enjoy the rock. Right? That's the point. The Maya is that I can enjoy this rock. The rock has nothing to do with God. It's only to do with me and my enjoyment. That's Maya. The material energy isn't the problem. Right? Does that make sense? It's the illusion that I can be enjoy. So that's the point. Is it's just inferior energy. So the illusion means, in other words, there's superior energy and inferior energy. But the point is one resides in the superior energy because he sees Krishna connected to it. He resides in the inferior energy when he doesn't see Krishna connected to it. Does that make sense? Because the energy is a person. Right? So as a person, if you don't see the person in relationship to who they are, then that annoys them. No? You know, someone's there, you're in their house, and you're completely ignoring them. That would annoy them, right? So therefore, the persons who do that are put in dead matter. It doesn't matter if you ignore them. You know, just like if you take the criminal and put him in a jail cell. It doesn't matter if he ignores the jail cell. He's there. Right? Doesn't matter what he does. He's there. And he's controlled by that cell. Rajana. Another one of my professors once explained, right? Does that make sense? Because he's so small, he can come under the control of Maya. But once he's come under the control of the internal potency, he'll never be controlled by Maya. Right? Because he is superior. Yes.
All right, so discovering of Maya, at what stage it happens? When the jiva is in neutral position, it's neither spiritual nor material, but is it? Because on liberated platform, there's no Maya there. So when it looks towards Maya, then
No. It means there's no Maya. Means she's Maya is simply that you don't see Krishna. You know what I'm saying? That's actually means that which is not. So the idea that something is not Krishna, because if you're trying to enjoy something, that means you're not seeing Krishna. You're seeing something to enjoy, right? Does that make sense? Let's say I go into the deity kitchen, right? And there's a pile of potatoes there, right? Those are Krishna's potatoes. So they're actually spiritual potatoes, right?
Yeah.
Right. Now, but if I see those potatoes as something I could enjoy, they're not spiritual anymore. Now they're acting as material potatoes. You understand? It's our perception that is there. So Maya means the illusion that I can enjoy God's energy. Right? And spiritual means I see God's energy in connection with God. Does that make sense? Right? We might complain and say that no, there is a material energy and a spiritual energy. Why are you giving it a generic that it's just God's energy, whatever it is, spiritual, material, if you see it in relationship with God, then you get the spiritual effect. And God's energy, no matter if it's spiritual, material, if you see it not in relation to God, you get a material effect. We give that so that when we're sitting here, then the specific works very nice. But if we step back, then how is it that great saintly persons are moving in this world, but they're in the spiritual world? And how is it demons are moving in the spiritual world, but they're in the material world? Because the difference is, the sage is seeing Krishna's energy, even though it's the inferior energy, in connection with Krishna. So he's in the spiritual world. And the demon, even though he's looking at spiritual energy, is dealing with material energy. Ravana, he's grabbing Sita, right? Ravana's talking to her as his wife. But Ravana, when he sees her, he's seeing Maya. Right? Ram is seeing internal potency. So it's just a matter of, it's the same person. If we understand the Sarup Shakti is one person that has internal, external, and jiva, then we're only seeing that one person. But we can see that one person in connection with Krishna, So then we deal with internal potency, or see that one person not connected to Krishna, so she manifests as external potency. Does that make sense? You know, yeah.
So the whole covering means the consciousness.
It's the consciousness. It means we are situated in the inferior energy. That's why we say it's real. Right? Does that mean the floor is here, the building is here, the trees, everything's here. And it's made out of inferior energy. Now, material means we see that not in connection with Krishna. And it's just like you're in Mayapur, it's the spiritual realm. But you could be quite mundane and just see the mundane element. Right? Does that make sense? Like that. So, or one is in the West in some place and in the temple, and one is appreciating as the spiritual realm. But it's spiritual because it's being used in Krishna's service. You know, the temple moves from there. It's just a regular old flat. You understand? So the energy, it's the same person. So she can manifest one or the other as she pleases. So the when we say material, it means the consciousness. You know, means the material can mean it just this location. It can mean external energy, but it specifically means the consciousness. Because you change the consciousness, then you may be situated in the material world, but your consciousness is not material. So the effect you're getting by your interactions with the inferior energy is that of the superior energy. You're getting devotional benefit. Is that right? Yeah. So that's why we're using that more broader definition. You use the Lord's energy in His service, then you're situated spiritually. You use the Lord's energy not in connection with Krishna, you're situated in the material. Like that. So it's not a matter of location. It's a matter of the location of the consciousness. No, that's where the location is. Is that okay?
Maharaj, so when I hear great sages, when I hear great sages telling about the danger of the material world, is the danger that the conscious may migrate to see it separate from Krishna?
Yes. Please. The problem with the danger of the material is that we will think there is the option to enjoy something separate from Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? You know, so that's the position. See, it's because you have a very nice situation. Then just seeing the situation, then we're very happy. Why? Is it the situation itself makes you happy? Or is it the options of what you can do in that nice situation? You understand? So there is this tendency to look at just the field of activity and think that is the actual focal point. Right? Does that make sense? So that's what creates the mundane. Right? It's because we think that the situation that we're in, that itself is the source of happiness. Right? But it's the situation is only a source of happiness, actually, for the living entity, if you perform an activity in that situation that's connected to Krishna for His pleasure. Right? Because we perform activities that are not in relationship to Krishna, we never actually get any satisfaction. Because when we define happiness, we define it not by that I'm actually experiencing happiness. I define it by if I've gotten what I say will make me happy. I decide if I get this, I'll be happy. So when I get it, then I say I'm happy. It's not that the thing itself makes me happy. I've just defined when I get it, because 5 minutes later, I'm not happy. So if it was the thing that made me happy, why aren't I happy? I got a whole closet full of things that are supposed to make, that's in the past I've said are going to make me happy. You know, I can't live without. I can't function without. Right? But the point is to become happy, I have to go out and buy more of that stuff. And then at some point, it'll make me happy if I have a bigger closet. Because there's no place to put all my happiness. Right? I remember one devotee was telling me, I said, okay, so you know, you're coming to India and this and that this year. He says, no, this year I can't come. He says, why not? He says, well, he says, you know, how you say, my wife put the 501 sari on the shelf and the whole shelf collapsed. So now we're having to completely rebuild the whole, you know, wardrobe and all that, you know. So that's, you know, and so that, you know, you knock out a wall, you do this and that, you know, go while you're at it, you go for it. So like that. So he was, you know, expanding the capacity to hold happiness. Right? You know. So yeah, so he didn't come that year. Yes.
So can we say that the consciousness, and according to the consciousness, the outside manifests?
No, the outside is manifest, it's how we perceive it. It means the column is there, it's not we change our consciousness and mystically change it into something else. It's still the same column, but then we see it in connection with Krishna or not in connection with Krishna. You know what I'm saying? It's not that we see, you know, an eggplant and then it turns into something else. You know, strange. You ever notice how when you know you're not so Krishna conscious, it looks like an eggplant, but if you're Krishna conscious, it looks like a cauliflower, and you know, like that. You know, like that. It says, yeah, I've noticed that also. You know, like that. But my wife got on my case because she said cauliflowers aren't so healthy, better a broccoli. So I've been practicing trying to make the eggplants turn into egg broccoli, like that. You know, like that. You know, so that doesn't happen. It's the same. It's just whether you see it in relation to Krishna or not. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like.
I'll go first.
Okay. Thank
you. The inferiority energy, is, we say inferior because it is temporary?
It's inferior because it's temporarily manifest and it's unconscious. Because superior energy is all conscious. So jivas are conscious, the internal potency is conscious. The external potency is not conscious. Right? But it's permanent, but its manifestations are temporary. Like that.
Before Kumaras, they pray that they never grow, so they won't get entangled in this material world.
For Kumaras, they know, okay, they might pray, but I know of originally they were cursed to stay like that. But it could also be that they just stayed like that, and then they were cursed to stay like that. So you could have a combination of both. Because Lord Brahma, he wanted them to have, you know, start a family, and they said, forget it. You know? So then they just permanently stay as 5-year-old kids, right? Even though they're, you know, they're basically now about 151 trillion years old, but, you know, they still look like they're 5, you know? Like that.
No. Yeah. It is simply the potential to see the world as not connected to Krishna.
That's all. They want to avoid. Maya means you don't see it connected to Krishna. That's all. Because everything is connected to Krishna. Right? So when we say connected to Krishna, we mean connected to Krishna in devotion, favor. Well, it means pure devotional service. Right? You know, like Kamsa saw everything connected to Krishna, but it wasn't exactly devotion, so he's still material. Like that. Like that. No. Yes. I couldn't hear the last part.
In the spiritual world, also able to live in Maya.
How are you defining spiritual world? Why is that? Means now, is this the spiritual world? Yes. So here, do we have both the spiritual and material energies working at the same time? Yes. So this is the place where tatastha is. Galoka, then you don't have that element of tatastha. It means the jivas are there, but they're not in a tatastha position. They're in the fire of the internal potency, so they're as good as fire. That's why we use that example.
So when you say that in the beginning, we were like in
Galoka? No, because it says that you have to be able to see both. It mentioned there specifically that on the floating on the Karanadak ocean. What was that place where it was saying about he's on the... What did it say was floating in Goloka? I mean in the Karanadak. You may remember where that was?
Page 37 top.
Means in the quote. Okay, yeah. Similarly, the jiva soul situated within the waters of the causal ocean, which lies between the material and spiritual worlds, is able to reside in both the dream world of matter and the spiritual world of divine wakefulness. So your perceiving of that is from the causal ocean, not from Goloka.
From there, we can see Krishna's pastimes.
Why? The acharyas aren't seeing Krishna's pastimes.
I'm saying in relation that Prabhupada mentioned or the idea about that we, in the beginning, that we were also in the Krishna's pastimes, but we feel
in the beginning.
Like that's why we came down here.
Yes, but the point is where are the pastimes taking place? See, this is the one defect when this discussion comes up, is because we always take it spiritual world has to mean Goloka. But the point is in the Bhagavatam, the pastimes of Krishna with the residents of Vrindavan are described, right? And that's happening in the spiritual world, right? Where is that spiritual world situated? Here. That's where you see. Because it has to be where you can see both. Goloka, you can't see both. So it can't be there. It has to be here. Plus, Jiva Goswami says you can't fall from Goloka. Right? So that's where the argument comes up. Is the devotees will automatically mean spiritual means Goloka, so you fell from Goloka. And the others will say Jiva Goswami says you can't fall from Goloka, so you were never there. Right, so therefore they write off everything. That Krishna's there, we have a relationship, this, that. No, we have to fall from Brahman or this or that. So you get into all kinds of stupidness, right? Because we just say, spiritual can only mean there. And then you have to take it through step by step by step. Okay, then it's here. Okay, it's there. But, you know, it always goes back. So that's the problem. It has to be where they both are. So it's just the causal ocean. So that means it's between the two. So it's not Goloka. Causal ocean is not Goloka. Right? But you have to be able to see the spiritual world. Right? So it's not exactly New York is where you're seeing the spiritual world. So it has to be someplace where there is the spiritual world. But at the same time, as you see that without Krishna, it's a material world. Right? It's the tata. It's the overlap. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Is Gokul Vrindavan the spiritual world, the material world? It's situated in the material world, you know, but it's the spiritual world. Right? But it's the spiritual world, but it's situated here. So that's the point. That is the tata. Right? The point is what's the meaning of preaching unless you have those who think it's a material world about? You know what I'm saying? It means you're not going to have a lot of preaching going on in Goloka. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So you have to have them both. So that's where the both are. Does that make sense? Right? Yeah. Okay. Rajanath, another one of my professors once explained that the jiva soul is but a reflection of Brahman, just as the sun is reflected on the surface of water. Brahman, when reflected upon Maya, is seen as the individual jiva soul. Does this make any sense to you? Right? Raghunath Das Babaji. This is also another Mayavadi speculation. See, it's the same thing. It's just a matter of instead of using the pot in the air, you're using the pot with water in it so there's a reflection. Right? Because if I put many pots, if you look in each pot, the full sun is in each pot. Right? So something like that. That example is used for Paramatma. It's only one sun, but we perceive it as many, many manifestations. But it's actually just one person. Right? So it works in there, but then because they want to be gods, so then they can use examples about God for themselves, you know, so like that. So they've like that. Brahman is boundless and unlimited. How can the boundless be reflected upon something mundane and thus limited? It is against the Vedic tenets to say that Brahman can be measured. This philosophy is illogical and abhorrent. Right? You also have the whole point is that he's already established before, where did Maya come from? If Brahman has no transformation, where is Maya from? So how can Brahman be reflected on Maya in the first place? Right? So that's the whole thing. So if it's reflected on there, it's just Brahman being, even if it was, it's just Brahman being reflected, just like the sun is reflected. It's not that now that's the sun and it's a separate entity. It's still just the sun being reflected. So it still doesn't turn out to be a jiva. You know? Rajana, once an itinerant sannyasi visiting Navadvipa said in a public lecture that the jiva is non-existent, a product of illusion. If this illusion is removed, there is only the undivided, undifferentiated Brahman and nothing else. What was his point? Point was is he should stop peeking, and then he just becomes the undivided, undifferentiated Brahman, and then everybody can be peacefully go back home, right? Raghunath Das Babaji. This is yet another typical illogical Mayavadi argument. If Brahman was the only one in existence, where did Brahma, illusion, come from? Secondly, who is under illusion? If the answer is that Brahman is an illusion, then you are degrading Brahman from a supreme transcendental position to something insignificant and secondary. And thus Brahman is not Brahman, the supreme. There, furthermore, you know, in other words, Brahman is not the Brahman supreme, meaning supreme Brahman. Then you have a different kind of Brahman. Right? So then you'd have to differentiate that there is supreme Brahman and then there is jiva Brahman. But they're trying to say it's all one. So if it's all one, how does this get this two different situations? Right, because the Brahman doesn't transform, doesn't have any feeling emotions, then why is it you would get something like that? Furthermore, if one argues that illusion is a separate entity, then this proposal contradicts the concept of non-duality, monism. If you say it's all one, where does illusion come from? Where does two come from? Right? Rajanath. I remember attending a debate in Navadvipa where a Brahmana pundit tried to establish the point that the jiva is the only reality in existence. Thus, the jiva creates everything in his dreamlike state and therefore experiences happiness and distress until when the dream ceases, he sees that he is Brahman. Can you kindly explain this to me? Now, he's taking it the reverse. It's not that we'll become Brahman. We are Brahman. We are the whole thing, but it's just an illusion. We're thinking we're not the whole thing. So when we give up the illusion, then we'll realize that we're the whole thing. It's the same argument, just taken in the reverse. Right? Right. In other words, the other Mayavadis are saying there is no jiva. It's an illusion to think that you're jiva and separate. You are the whole Brahman. This one is saying there is no thing else. There's only the jiva. The jiva is the total Brahman. But he thinks he's not. You know what I'm saying? No, it's just the same argument in reverse. So even amongst Mayavadis, you get so many different schools of thought. And probably each one of them argues with the other. You know? And which illusion is the right illusion, right? Rajanath. Oh, okay. Raghunath Das Babaji. This also reeks of illogical Mayavadi thought and word jugglery. If, as the Mayavadis say, Brahman is undifferentiated, how is the dream state produced along with all this differentiation from Brahman state to the Jiva state? Right? You have it. Where did the dream come from? Where is the differentiation within that? How is it that the Jiva has become from Brahman? Right? Because he's saying he's all Brahman, but he's still in the position of Jiva. Right? Even if it's not, I merge into Brahman, I'm already Brahman, but I somehow never think I'm Jiva. You know what I'm saying? It's just bigger ego here. The other one, at least, you know, I'm here and then I'll go back into Brahman. I'll become that. No, I'm already that. You know, it's like that. It's just a little bit bigger, you know. Mayavadis with a bigger ego, right? You know. Mayavadis will never succeed in establishing the concept of monism just by offering analogies such as, under quote, under illusion one confuses mother of pearl with silver or a rope with a snake. Their arguments are shallow and misleading. Right? Because they're trying to say it's all one, but they're always giving an example of two. They're never giving an example of one. You know, the green bird and the green tree. There's a green bird. You can still see the green bird and the green tree. Right? The rope and the snake. It's two things. There is a rope and there is a snake. Because it's saying, no, one's... If you think the rope is a snake or the snake's a rope, you're an illusion. But there is a rope and there is a snake. It's not that there is no such thing as snakes. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Maharaj, the second argument of the Jiva looks like a Buddhism.
Could be, but he was saying a sannyasi came. A Brahmana pandit. But you have to remember, Mayavad philosophy is Buddhist philosophy. All it is that they've used the Vedic, authority in the way of using the verses from the Veda and the analogies from the Veda. But otherwise, it's all Buddhism, and that's why it doesn't make any sense. But Buddhism means non-Vedic, so it doesn't make sense. That's the idea. Okay? Yeah. So that means the arguments you use for Mayavadis, you can use for Buddhists. And the things that they use to defeat Buddhists, you know, works for Mayavadis. And the principle, there may be some little details that are different. You know. Okay, their arguments are shallow and misleading, because that's why it says word juggling, because they're just trying to get you to think something is correct, which is not. Rajana, so far I have understood that the original identity of the jiva is beyond the circle of influence of Maya. Nonetheless, Maya is able to captivate the jiva because of the minute nature of his constitution. My question is, did the Chit Shakti create the jiva and endowing him with this intrinsic tatastha subhav? Raghunath Das Babaji. No, the Chit Shakti is the full and absolute spiritual energy of Sri Krishna, and her creations are all eternally perfect. The jiva is not a nitya siddha, an eternally perfect being. The jiva has become perfect through sadhana. That is, he becomes a sadhana siddha, and then experiences the same level of spiritual bliss as that of a nityasiddha. The four classes of shakis serving Srimati Radharani are nityasiddha. Srimati Radhika is Chit Shakti Sarup, the embodiment of the Chit Shakti, and these nityasiddha shakis are her kaya vyuha, direct personal expansions. Thus, they emanate from the Chit Shakti, Srimati Radhika herself. Right, so, in other words, the internal potency is different from the jivas, right? Because they're just an expansion of her. They're already perfect. But so even as they expand, they're still perfect. But the jivas, in their expansion, they have to become perfect. Right? They have to come to the platform of nitya siddha. Does that make sense? Right? But they can do that by just recognizing the superiority of interacting with Krishna and immediately take up that position. Or they can, you know, look at Maya and then come here and then figure out this is not going to work, then start performing their sadhana and get there. Does that make sense? So the difference is simply one comes from bhav sadhana to prema, or one drops from bhav sadhana into the material world, then takes up sadhana bhakti, and then elevates himself back to the platform of Brahma Bhuta, then continues with that bhav sadhana, and then develops prema. Right? Does that make sense?
Scenic grid?
I'm not sure if you'd want to call worm and stool scenic. You know what I'm saying? Because most of the universe is not so scenic. I mean, it's a nice way of putting it, of course, but it's not exactly.
Limited description.
Limited description, yes. It's like those brochures, you know? You know, you see the brochure and it's all nice and all that, and you know, when you get there, it's not exactly like that. You know, it's like when they show you a building, you know, the architectural design. There's just the building, you know, and a few trees and people walking around. But then when you actually see it, there's another building about 3 feet away from it, you know, on three sides. So, you know, it doesn't actually look like that. So that's, in that way, it's the scenic route, yes. Maya's scenic route. Yeah, come see the sights. Yeah, you know, but it's not exactly like that. Yes.
When the soul finally gets rid of, let's say, covering of Maya and develops prema and goes back to the spiritual world, he cannot fall down.
No.
Because develops prema. But does it remember the suffering in the material world?
Do you remember?
No.
Yes. So the point is to see, because that concept of being Jewish is from the material world, right? So therefore, it's not imperative that they remember. Does that make sense?
No.
If you were Jewish, it'd make sense. Means the point is let's say, if you're having such a great time, do you ever remember things that are bad? No. So it's not that you can't remember, it's just why would you? Does that make sense? But the point is if it's a matter of are you going to remember, you know, friends that used to be with here when you get there, that you can do. Does that make sense? So that is there, but otherwise you don't worry about stuff here because it's not, it means you have fond memories of sitting in the backyard eating mud. No. So, therefore, you know, it means, you know, when you're small, everything you pick up, if you can pick it up, it goes in your mouth, right? Sit down next to the curtain goes in your mouth. You know, you're sitting anywhere, the pillow goes in your mouth. Everything goes in your mouth, right? Anamoy means you check it out by seeing if it's edible, right? So do you remember all that? You remember all those pillows and curtains and, you know, that cigarette butt that was sitting there and, you know, you remember, no, not that, you know, like that, you know, all that stuff. You remember all that? No, so the point is you did it, so it's kind of like, who cares, because you have other stuff. Why? You want to remember?
No.
Oh, you want to make sure you don't remember? Yeah, no, you won't remember. It means it's not something that's important. Is that okay? Yeah.
All right. The Acharyas, the Nitya Siddhas?
The Acharyas and Nitya Siddhas, yeah. Like that. Means like Rupa and Raghunath, they were always Nitya Siddhas. The other four became Nitya Siddhas. So when they've come here as our Acharyas, they're already Nitya Siddhas, but they weren't before. Like Sanatana Goswami, Susadana Siddha became perfect. Like that. So they had gone through being in the material world and getting back to and then developing that love of God. So then now then they come back as the Acharyas. But the other Acharyas, then they are always Nitya Siddha. Does that make sense? Yeah. Does that make sense? So the point is, when the iron is fire, it doesn't matter whether it has been there for, you know, 5 minutes or been there for 2 years. It's the same temperature. So no one makes that kind of distinction. We only make the distinctions here so that you know that you have to continue practicing the sadhana properly. or, you know, to get that inspiration, or to reduce the false ego, or, you know what I'm saying? So these things are brought out, but otherwise in a relationship, nobody cares. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's just like, let's say you have a big family and half the kids were, some of the kids were born to those particular two parents. Others were born to one of those parents and somebody else. And some of the kids were adopted. But now they've all grown up together, and all, so they're all brothers and sisters. They don't think, oh, you were the adopted, you were, you know, you're the half-brother from this side, and you're the half. They don't think like that. It doesn't matter. Once you're there, then it doesn't matter. Just like with the gopis, then it's only pointing out that they're coming from different backgrounds. There's the Nitya Siddhas who are coming down to give association. Then there's the sages of Dandakaranya, then they came there, then the daughters of the Devatas, like that, and then others, individuals. So you have these three groups of gopis that are coming up. Right? So it only is to show that from any background, if you follow the process, you can get to that position. But the important thing is that you're only going to attain fully that position if you get the association of the Nitya Siddhas. Does that make sense? Yeah. Is that the point? Yeah. Is that okay? Okay. On the other hand, the jivas are produced by the jiva shakti of Sri Krishna, the tatastha shakti. The chit shakti is purna shakti, the full and complete potency of Krishna, whereas the jiva shakti is the apurna shakti, the incomplete and partial energy of Sri Krishna. All full and absolute principles are transformations of the purna shakti. In contrast, the jivas, who are atomic particles of consciousness, are the transformations of the apurna shakti. Sri Krishna expands himself, taking up various forms appropriate for presiding over the different manifestations of a shakti. Correspondingly, he manifests different kinds of entities according to the different kinds of potencies he employs to create them. When presiding over the chit shakti manifestation, Sri Krishna manifests his original form as Sri Krishna in Vraja, or as Sri Narayan, the Lord of Vaikuntha. When presiding over the jiva shakti, he expands as Sri Balaram, his Vilas Murti, which is the expansion that assists Sri Krishna in his pastimes. When presiding over the Maya shakti, he accepts the triplicate Vishnu expansions of Karanadakshaya Vishnu, Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, and Kiradakshaya Vishnu. As Sri Krishna in Braja, right, does that make sense? In other words, he has his potencies, and he is the lord of those potencies. So depending upon the potency, he takes that particular expansion, right? So the internal potency then is as Krishna himself, right? Or if they're in Vaikuntha, as Narayan, right? Then as the jivas, that's Balaram, right? And then of the external energy, then that is of the Purusha avatars, Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, Kiradakshaya Vishnu, Karanadakshaya Vishnu. Right?
So Balaram is expanding from Swarupa.
No, Balaram is expanding from Krishna. He's saying these are all Vishnu Murtis, but it's just different Vishnu Murtis are the lords of the different particular energies. Does that make sense? So the internal potency, then the Lord does that himself. Right? For the jivas, then his first expansion is Balaram, or if it's Narayan, is Sankarshan. Then they are in charge of the Tatastha Shakti. Right? And then for the Maya Shakti, right? Because you have internal, external, and jiva. Right? So then for the external, that's the Purusha avatars. They take care of the managing the Maya Shakti. Right? Balaram, the jivas, and Krishna himself, the internal potency. Does that make sense? someone's got to manage it. Does that make sense?
So
Sarup
Shakti has nothing to do with this side of
his connection. Sarup Shakti means as Balaram's there, then he has his internal potency, as you know Revati and you know Janava and like that. Does that make sense? Yeah, so there's all those means, and whatever it is, then there's that line. In Vishnu, then there's Sri Bhu and Nila. Right? So those are the internal potency that go with it. You know, Ananta, he has his feminine counterpart. Right? You know, Karana Daksha Vishnu, Rama Devi is there. Does that make sense? What's the doubt?
My doubt was because Krishna and his expansion of Srimati Radharani is very short.
But that means we're saying is that the question is Swoop Shakti is there and she expands. But at the same time as then there is the Vishnu, because all Shakti is dependent upon Shaktiman. So what Shaktiman is in charge of which Shakti? So Balaram is in charge of the Jiva Shakti, right? Krishna is in charge of the internal potency. And the Purusha avatars are in charge of the external potency. Does that make sense? Yeah. As Sri Krishna in Braja, he brings into existence everything that is fully and wholly spiritual. In Braja, expanded as Sri Balaram, he generates the Nitya Siddha Parshada, the eternally liberated associates and servitors, who execute the eight kinds of devotional service to him as Sri Krishna in Vrindavan. In Vaikuntha, Sri Balaram expands as Sankarshan, Ananta Sesh, to generate the Nitya Siddha Parshad of Sri Narayan, who accomplish the eight kinds of service to him as Sri Narayan in Vaikuntha. Sri Shankarshan then further expands as Mahavishnu to preside over the Maya Shakti. Mahavishnu generates the Tathasta Shakti Jivas, borderline potency souls who are susceptible to the influence of Maya, and further expands, accepting the form of Paramatma as the heart of the Tathasta Shakti Jivas. As long as these Tathasta Shakti Jivas generated by Mahavishnu do not receive the shelter of the Haladini Shakti, which is bestowed by his mercy alone, they are always prone to be subjugated by Maya. When captivated by Maya, they are obedient to the dictates of the three modes of material nature. Hence, the conclusion is that the Jiva Shakti gives birth to the Jivas. The Chit Shakti does not produce the Jivas. Right? Because that was the question. Right? So in other words, the jivas in their neutral state are produced from Mahavishnu. Then they may come when they come to the nitya position, then they're under the protection of Balaram, or in Vaikuntha of Sankarshan. Right? Does that make sense? So one is functioning under one of them. Right? Now if one is then working with Srimati Radharani, then one it becomes in the fire of that. So then one is directly connected with Krishna. But the point is that Balaram, you know, and his expansions, then it all works out. Right? Like that. We'll see later how much he gets into the detail. But then Ananga is the Dom. Ananga is Radharani's sister. Right? She is Vrindavan. Right? Does that make sense? Yes.
So among all the Krishna's energy, only Jiva Shakti comes under an illusion?
Yes, only Jivas can come under illusion. Because Maya is not under illusion. Maya knows who she is, so she's not under illusion. And the internal folks, he knows who they are. So it's only the Jivas can choose whether they work under Maya or under the internal potency. Because they're so small. The others are very great. You know? The potency that, you know, deals with everything like that. You know, so that only the Jiva is just limited and small. He's just that big. That's all he is. But let's say you take internal potency, you take Lalita, you know, then you know, she's one as the manifestation of one of the eight bhavas, you know, within the, that conjugal rasa. That means, and the conjugal rasa includes everything else below it. So everything that is connected with that rasa throughout all the other rasas is all under her control. Right? So that means everything within this world that's connected in that way to that one particular aspect is all under her control. And then all those unlimited universes, and then Vaikuntha, and so her potency pervades the whole cosmos. Right? You know, and Maya is just manifest within one quarter of the cosmos. So one quarter is not small. You know? You know, one quarter of unlimited. And we're 1/10,000th at the tip of the hair, no matter how you work it out. You know? So we're unique, the very small. So just like there's the biggest, there has to be the smallest. You know? Just like you have the internal, you have to have the external. And if you have internal and external, you have to have that point where they meet. Because everything has its point where it meets. You have day and you have night, you have twilight. You have the land, you have the ocean, you have the beach. There's always that sun. Is that my sense? Yeah. So the energy is there, you know, basically unlimited. We're what's limited. You know, that's us. But it works out. They don't have to become another Shakti to become happy. They're happy as, you know, Jivas. Just they give up that Tattvastha position, but they don't become not Jivas. Does that make sense? Yeah. Vrajanath. Okay, so in other words, Chit Shakti does not produce the Jivas, right? In other words, they're expanding from Mahavishnu, right? Does that make sense? Vrajanath, earlier you have explained that the spiritual world as well as the Jivas are eternal. How is it possible for eternal entities to have birth, appearance, or creation? If they appear at a certain time and do not exist before that, how does that confer eternality upon them? Right. So the saying is that the living entities are saying they're manifest from Mahavishnu. So how is it they're eternal if they're manifest? Right. Raghunath Das. Time and space as experienced in the material world is quite different from the time and space of the spiritual world. Material time is divided into three sections: past, present, and future. However, in the spiritual world, time is ever-present and without division. All spiritual activities and happenings of the transcendental realm are perceived in Vartamana, the present, whereas whatever incidences are normally experienced here are rooted in the notions of mundane time and space. When we discuss spiritual subjects and say things such as, later the jiva became entangled with Maya, the spiritual world was created, or Maya has no function in the creation of the jiva, and so on, our words are being influenced by the concepts of material time. In our captive conditioned status, this influence is very natural and can be expected. In all discussions about the jiva and transcendence, our thoughts cannot be freed from the concepts of mundane time, which automatically enter our deliberations. Thus, inevitably, we talk and think in terms of past, present, and future. Right? Does that make sense? So in other words, we're only saying this because we think in the way of time and space. So we say when the jivas are generated, or when the material world is created, or when the spiritual world is created, you know, it means like you have the Vaikuntha planets are expanding, or when the Dham comes and manifests here. All these things is that we're thinking of time and space, but they've always been like that. The jiva's always there. But it's just a matter of when he's manifest, so you can appreciate. Just like material energy is always there, it's just when it manifests as something that you can appreciate. Does that make sense? So the jiva is always there. It's just when because the Lord's unlimitedly expanding. So that means at some point, the Tattvastha Shakti is also expanding its manifestation. In other words, God's unlimited, but the manifestation of that is then it being manifest. And it's unlimited. So that's the problem. We have problem with these things because we think in time and space. So they say, well, how is that possible? You know, it's not possible on the material platform, but it is on the spiritual. Because spiritual, there's only present. Right? So even you say you manifest now, but it's in the present. And it'll always be the present. So it's eternal. Right? But the point is these energies always exist. Yes? Sorry? I can't. But Krishna is still there. No? See, the point is Krishna and his name are non-different. So if they're discussing about Krishna, who are they associating with? Krishna, but just there's a different mood. You know what I'm saying? So Krishna in the form of the name, then there's that element of separation. But Krishna personally, then you don't get that. But you can. It means that whole pastime of Prema Sarovar is that Radha and Krishna are physically sitting next to each other, but they think neither of them are there. So they're feeling the separation even though they're physically present. Right? Or as soon as they come in contact with Krishna, they're so happy to be there with Krishna. And it's so great that they're worried about Krishna going away. So they're already feeling separation even though Krishna's there. You know what I'm saying? So it's just different flavors of what's going on. But Krishna's always there. Here, you have a friend or somebody, they're not here. They're in some other location. You're separated. So even if you talk about them, it's still you're talking about the past. But Krishna is always present. So therefore, when you're talking about him, he is present. You know? Or if someone leaves and they're not in this, you know, scene anymore and they've gone somewhere else. Right? Then you can't access that anymore. It's not like, okay, maybe after, you know, some days or weeks you can see him again. No, that manifestation's gone. So it's only residing in the past. But you understand for our experience. So you have three different things here. So but they are separate, but Krishna is always present. Krishna never goes away. So it's just a matter of what flavor is being manifest through that. Because even by discussing it, you may feel his presence, or you may feel his separation. Does that make sense? So that's what he's saying here. We will always bring into it, inevitably, right? It says, in all discussions about the jiva and transcendence, our thoughts cannot be freed from the concepts of mundane time, which automatically enter our deliberations. Thus, inevitably, we talk and think in terms of past, present, and future. So he's just saying, this will happen. So don't worry about it. The point is try to understand the point. Right? That's what we try to do. So examples are given, things are, you know, so otherwise, what is a term in a place of time and place of something that's eternal? And it has its variegations and variations. How do you explain that? You don't have that here. So you have to use something from here. That's why analogy is there. So basically, we're using analogy when we say that. Right? Does that make sense? You know, when the Lord breathes out and you can see all the universes. But the point is the material energy is already there. It's just that now it's manifest like that. You know, it's not that he made it and then when he breathes it in, it disappears. It's always there. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. The eternal servant of Sri Krishna, the jiva, having forgotten his real identity, has been imprisoned by Maya, illusion. The Vaishnavas repeat this sentence very often. However, all Vaishnavas know that the jiva has an eternal nature of which there are two groups, Nityabhada, eternally conditioned, and Nityamukta, eternally liberated. The subject is put in this way because the ordinary human intellect is in the grips of pramada, illusion, and therefore cannot fully comprehend transcendental matters. However, the introspective sage perceives spiritual truth in the quietness of his chit samadhi, devotional meditation. All our speeches are mundane and covered with material contamination. It is up to you to discern the underlying pure truth. Concerning these topics, there is no room for debating and arguing, because applying logic and rhetoric to spiritual subject matters with their material inconceivable concepts is a futile exercise. Right? So you can't really deal with that. But there is the discussion so by which you can appreciate it. In other words, we're speaking, we're using the material world generated by the material tongue. It's vibrated in the air, which travels through the ether. It falls upon the material ear. That then digests it. The material mind then comes up and it said, oh, he said this. Like that. So the whole process is material, but because it's coming in parampara, it has the chit shakti. So the chit shakti then is being carried through that. You know what I'm saying? It's just like you have the pot is carrying the liquid. You know what I'm saying? But the pot and the liquid are two different things. But without the pot, you're unable to appreciate the liquid. You know what I'm saying? So because we're dealing on the mundane, it has to be explained and expressed and given through the mundane. It's through the mundane senses. But the chit shakti is there. That's the difference. When the chit shakti is not there, it is mundane. Even if they're talking about Krishna, you have these people doing Bhagavat Saptas and talking Krishna Leela. But if it's not in parampara, it is mundane. Right? So therefore the chit shakti is there. That's the spiritual aspect. So contemplating that, then one can appreciate what's the actual spiritual position. You know what I'm saying? But we're having to use, but always remember, this is a reflection of that. So it's not that the mechanics or anything's different. As we said before, beginning of class, the discussion, it's a matter of consciousness on whether it's material or spiritual. You understand? But we are using elements of inferior energy to express it. And so those inferior energy is a temporary manifestation. So in this way, it is a temporary, we're using temporary manifestations to discuss the eternal. Does that make sense? Yeah.
So Maharaj, the term of mundane is addressed, not seeing Krishna.
Yeah, so mundane is not seeing Krishna, because here is we're not worrying about these other aspects. But while we're conditioned, then we look at things according to time and space. So that's always going to be a weakness, right? Because up to a certain point, we're great. But then when it gets to a certain point, then we always have this problem. In other words, where it's a point that time and space can't, you know, it's not limited by time and space, then immediately we have questions. How is that possible? Because all we do is perceive things according to time and space. Does that make sense? So we're always going to come up with those problems. So in other words, if it's going beyond time and space, we have problems. And if it's simultaneously two things at once, we have problems. These are where all our questions come up.
Once you identify with the temporary body, sees things through time and space?
Yes. Yeah. So that's the point, is that why he's saying that the introspective sage perceives spiritual truth in the quietness of his chit samadhi, devotional meditation. So in other words, when you contemplate the instructions and understanding the spiritual nature of it, then that contemplation, you can appreciate the actual nature of it. Does that make sense? So if we're able to contemplate that, that's when we appreciate. Right? Like that. Because it's not the thing itself. On the material platform, it's not the thing itself. The thing exists, but it is the medium for carrying the chit potency. Right? And Krishna, he is non-different from his energy. So you are experiencing the Lord. Right? You know, like we were discussing yesterday about he's manifest through, you see, you're able to perceive through, because he manifests through his internal potency. So then the question comes, so how do you tell who the Lord is? Because the form that you see is the internal potency. Same time as the internal potency and himself are non-different, so it is him. You know what I'm saying? And then sometimes it's also the example is given of Krishna's just like an actor, he's dressed up. So therefore the different forms that are there, but it's still the same person. You know what I'm saying? You dress the person up and they act, you can tell who they are. You know, because they do the same kind of things, no matter who they are. Does that make sense? So that's the point. You can still identify the individual. So even though whatever form, he's in the form of Krishna, the form of Varaha, you can still see Krishna. It doesn't matter what is the form. But at the same time, that form is him. So this is where we have problem. We want to say, no, it's this or that, because that's how the material world works. You can't have contradiction here. But in the spiritual world, there's no problem with contradiction. Because God is everything, so therefore all contradictions are reconciled in him. That means contradictions can exist in the same place at the same time on the spiritual platform. In the material world, it's this or that. Does that make sense? Yeah. I am aware of the fact that you cannot immediately comprehend the depths of this line of spiritual thought, right? So it's a particular line of spiritual thought, because generally it's not used, right? Because it immediately becomes confusing. But when the questions get over to there, then it can be explained. But the point is it's generally not used. It's not a specific line of thought that's regularly used. Right? Because we think in time and space, we're going from here to there. We go from here to the spiritual world. But the point is you're in Mayapur, you're already in the spiritual world. So it's just a matter of realizing where you are. You know? Does that make sense? But we'll think of it, yes, if go back to Godhead. So because it's in the matter of time and space, then we can relate to it. But in actuality, it's just changed the consciousness and you're already there. Does that make sense? So, yeah. However, as your devotional practice and spiritual attachment increase, your power to discriminate between matter and spirit will be sharpened. Your body and its present activities are mundane, but in reality you are not mundane. You are an infinitesimal spiritual entity. Right? So in other words, the jiva is never mundane. He's covered by the concept of mundanity. So he's acting in a way that's not connected to Krishna, so we call that mundane. But the jiva is always eternal, right? He's always spiritual, always liberated. But the problem is he doesn't think he is. You know, it's like you have, not sure exact example, but sometimes you have little animals, they grow up together. You know, like you have a warthog and you have a lion, you have, you know, something else, right? You know, and they all grow up together. So whoever's the prominent one, they all think they're that. You know, so the lion thinks it's a warthog, you know, so it goes around with the warthog and eats what the warthogs eat and stuff like that. It doesn't actually know it's a lion until it meets other lions. So it's kind of like, hey, you know, does that make sense? So that's what happens. The jiva just thinks he's mundane, but he's not actually. Yes. I don't quite remember. I remember the name of the ugly duckling, but you'd have to refresh our memory.
The little pig takes birth in the company of ducklings. Uh-huh. And is teased by the other ducks when they're born because it's so ugly, and it just doesn't fit in with the other ducks. And eventually, anyway, this duckling, after being tormented and abused, eventually grows up, and then one day a flock of swans comes and recognizes him to be one of them and takes her with him. And he realized that he's actually a swan and not a duckling.
Okay. Yeah, basically. That's the basic gist, yes. like that. So therefore the term hamsa is used. So with those who understand it, they're known as swans. The difference is we probably use, instead of ducklings, we use crows. That's what the Bhagavatam does. The swans and the crows. You know, it has more of a West Side Story effect, you know, like that. But at the same time, the other one works because they're all ducks. It's just that the swan is the highest grade of duck, and the what we call ducks are the lower grade of ducks. You know. That makes sense? Because in Sanskrit, I think the root for them all is the same, because they're all water birds who can fly. So it's just the swans are the highest of them. Right, the other side. When you learn more about yourself, you'll realize how superior and different the nature of your real self is from the phenomenal world. If I talk to you about your real self, or if you merely hear and read about it, these instructions will not be very profitable for you. You must begin the process by sincerely chanting Hari Nam. Thereby your spiritual identity will be manifest. Gradually and concordantly, your perception of the spiritual world will take discernible shape. Both mind and words are material products. Therefore, even untiring efforts in their application are unable to approach transcendental topics. Hence, in the Vedas, Taittiriya Upanishad 2.4.1, we find, that is Brahman. If mind and words are searching for him, they return unsuccessfully. Interesting. My advice for you is that you do not approach anyone and ask for a decision upon this philosophy. Try to feel and realize it within yourself. So far, I've given you the hints and pointers. Right, so he says, don't go to others and discuss it, because what's going to be the difference in discussing it with him? The point is you have to realize it through devotional service.
So Prabhupada said his mantra is not an artificial position.
Yeah, it's not an artificial position. It's the natural, but one has to become comfortable with it. Right? We're only feeling we're only uncomfortable because we're not used to it. We're used to the mundane as real. So we're not used to spiritual actually as being real. Rajanath, you have said that jiva is like the spark of a fire and also like an atomic particle of the rays of the spiritual sun. What exactly is the role of the jiva shakti according to these analogies? Raghunath Das Babaji, Sri Krishna is the conflagration, the self-illuminating spiritual sun. Thus, everything within the burning flames of the sun is fully spiritual. The rays emanating from their source, the spiritual sun, are the subservient expansions of the Swarup Shakti. The Paramanu, atomic particles, comprising the rays of the spiritual sun, are the jivas. The Swarup Shakti, it's even interesting that in Vedic, when you're talking about time, atomic time, it still is done off of a ray of sunlight. Right, because the point is that's where the atomic particles are, right? And so therefore the analogy of the jivas, which are atomic particles coming from the sun, like rays of the sun, and the Vedic time, it works off the same principle. The sun rays and the atomic sun ray particles are inseparable and the same. Similarly, the jiva shakti is compared to the sun rays, and the innumerable jivas are compared to the atomic particles of those sun rays. The jiva shakti and their constituent jivas are generated by Sri Krishna and remain inseparably united with him. Just as the sun rays and the atomic particles of the sun rays are all undividedly one. Furthermore, although they are one simultaneously because of the minute independence that individual jivas exercise, they are eternally separate from Krishna. Hence, the eternal truth is that Sri Krishna and the jivas are simultaneously one with and different from one another. Right? So, the sun rays and the sun are non-different, right? Means it's just like when you're sitting and then you see some light on the floor, you say, oh, the sun's coming in the window. But at the same time, the sun rays are different from the sun. Right? So that's the thing, it's simultaneous. Also, notice, interesting, it mentions sun rays as a principle, that's the Jiva Shakti. Then there's the individual atomic particles within the sun ray. That's the Jiva, individual Jivas itself.
You missed something about the example of the egg and the fingernails and the hair. I skipped
a paragraph, yeah, okay. Oh, I see, that's what, because there's the, I was wondering. Okay, so here's the question. There's two paragraphs, actually. Vrajanath, on one hand, there are the rays of the transcendental sun. On the other, the atomic particles floating within these rays. These particles are non-different from the sun, and yet, as you have said, they are eternally different. How is this possible? Raghunath Das Babaji. One of the characteristics of material nature is that objects produced by other objects remain either attached to their source or separate completely from the source. For example, an egg produced by the bird is totally separated from its source, whereas the fingernails and hair grow upon the human body and thus remain attached to their source, as long as they are not cut and clipped. However, in the spiritual nature, these matters are completely different. Right? Because there's simultaneously one with and difference. Here, it's they're either connected or they're not connected. But there, they're simultaneously connected and not connected. Right? So they're independent, but they're still they're the same. Okay. So then we'll continue in the evening. Today's Friday, no?
Yes.
Yeah.
Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki,
yeah.
Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki,
yeah.
Jainatai Gaurav Pingala.